us get sick. Don't let us get old. Don't let us get stupid, all right. Just make us be brave and make us play nice. Let us be together tonight. Troubles they've had to keep me from thinking of mine. Don't let us get sick. Don't let us get old. Don't let us get stupid, all right. Just make us be brave. Make us play nice. Let us be together tonight. Causes the ripples in time. Lucky to be here with someone I like, who maketh my spirit to shine. Don't let us get sick. Don't let us get old. Don't let us get stupid, all right. Just make us be brave. Make us play nice. Let us be together tonight. Don't let us get sick. Don't let us get old. Don't let us get stupid, all right. Just make us be brave. Make us play nice. Let us be together tonight.
The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Wait a minute. Do you still think politics is boring? Well, not when you can say fun words like caucus.
Caucus.
Yes, it's fun words like caucus and more. With the intellectual, intersexual, and intersectional. Nicole Sandler on NicoleSandler.com.
Trump is still trying to repeal and replace Obamacare. So far, he just doesn't have the votes, okay?
He doesn't have the votes,
but then again, that's how he got elected. Now, I still don't know what's going to happen, but Republican leadership in the House is trying to rally the troops.
Take
House Majority Leader Kevin McCarthy. He pleaded with his fellow Republicans to pass the bill, saying, quote, "Now is not the time to decide what to do or how to do it. Now is the time to do it." Yes. Yes. Act now and ask questions later, like, what did we just do and why the hell did we do that? The current hang-up is that under the new bill, individual states could opt out of protecting people with pre-existing conditions.
Yep.
And a lot of moderate Republicans don't like that. But North Carolina Representative Pettinger explains that if you have a pre-existing condition that your state won't cover, quote, people can go to the state they want to live in. Hey, kids, Dad's got pancreatitis. Road trip. This is going to be a real boon for state tourism. Look forward to signs like, Virginia is for livers.
It's coming.
I heart transplant New York.
Yep.
And come get an Alabamputation. And, of course, Florida's new slogan, we have painkillers. Wait, are you a cop?
Oh, yeah. It's all coming. It's all coming. So in case you've been away from the TV or the radio in the last hour or so, America's Health Care Act passed the House of Representatives 217 to 213. They needed 216 to pass it. They just squeaked by. And now they're all getting on their buses for another field trip to the White House, where they've got Bud Light waiting for them in the Rose Garden. I'm not kidding. I did not make that up. Some very intrepid reporters were watching them wheel in the carts of beer. Beer! Because that's how Republicans in the House celebrate that they rammed through a massive tax cut for the richest among us, disguised as a healthcare bill. It's not a healthcare bill. It's a massive tax cut for billionaires. But that's not all that happened today. Now, we're going to talk about this vote, what happened. In fact, this is what happened shortly before they started the vote. You know, the first thing they did was not to vote on the ACHA. Oh, no. Well, here's the guy who does the announcements on C-SPAN.
The three amendments added as part of the rule today, the one by Tom MacArthur of New Jersey, which, among other things, deletes the essential health benefit provisions.
Yeah.
Fred Upton's amendment, providing $8 billion over 5 years to help those with pre-existing conditions.
Mm-hmm.
And an amendment which would create $15 billion in federal risk-sharing programs.
Great.
To help cover the costs of high medical claims. So those have been added to the bill.
Yeah, but the first thing they voted on before they got to the bill itself was the bill to exempt members of Congress and their staffs from this health care legislation. And if you thought the Democrats were standing up for you, you're wrong, because they passed it unanimously. So the Democrats, seeing, you know, the writing on the wall that at least it's going to go through the House, you know, knocking on laminate here, it should hopefully get stopped dead in its tracks in the Senate. But because it passed the House, the Democrats all voted along with the Republicans to exempt themselves from whatever bad shit goes down. Isn't that lovely? But that's not all that happened today. No, you know, today is is National Prayer Day. Yes, in the land of the free and the home of the brave, where we have a separation of church and state enshrined in the Constitution, we have a National Prayer Day. And the president, Mr. Dump himself, used this day to sign another executive order. He loves those executive orders, you know, the things that he criticized Obama about every day. He signed an executive order promoting free speech and religious liberty. Well, I had to find out what the hell this was all about. And whenever I have a question about things relating to separation of church and state, I call on my friend, Reverend Barry W. Lynn. He's the executive director of Americans United for Separation of Church and State.
Hello.
Hey, Barry. It's Nicole Sandler calling. How are you doing today?
Well, it's nice to talk with you. I'm doing fine, except for the president's use of the National Day of Prayer, which, of course, shouldn't exist, to do even more damage to the truth in the country.
Yeah, this is disconcerting on a day that's overall, you know, it's not so great. The House just voted to pass the what they call the American Health Care Act to undo the Affordable Care Act with 217 votes. They needed 216 to pass it. So, boy, he's batting 1,000 today and really undermining the country. So the president today signed this executive order promoting free speech and religious liberty. In my mind, it's anything but. Can you explain what this executive order was about?
Yeah, I think mainly this was a way to demonstrate for the 150th time that he's a better showman than he is a strategist, that he's a better show person than he is a sincere Christian. What he tried to do, Nicole, today is to set up a very false story. The idea that churches in this country are literally losing their freedom of speech, losing the ability to speak on issues. What exists in the tax code today is a prohibition, not just for churches, but for any charity, that you can't endorse or oppose candidates for public office. This was created 60 years ago to kind of improve the tax code by not allowing people to just raise money, so-called charitable money, for the purpose of defeating somebody they didn't like or electing someone they didn't like. And it served the country very well for these 60 years. Churches maintain their integrity. to the extent that your listeners believe that there is integrity in the government. It maintains that as well. It doesn't blur the line, and it doesn't create the kind of corrosive effect that it would be if churches, and for that matter, other charities, were able to simply announce who you should vote for, from the city council all the way to the president of the United States.
It is amazing. You know, I probably wouldn't have as much of an issue with this if they pay taxes. So if they want to give up their tax-exempt status, then by all means, go ahead and, you know, make political statements from the pulpit. But they do enjoy tax-exempt status. That should preclude them from engaging in political cheerleading, shouldn't it?
No, of course it should. And not only are they tax-exempt, but they've got all kinds of other exemptions that other organizations don't have. For example, no church has to file a form at the end of the year, like those of us who run charities and advocacy groups do, of where does our money come from, where does it go, who are the five highest paid people in our organization. These are the kinds of pieces of information that the tax folks, in fact, rely on and that the public should know about. Churches don't have to do that. Synagogues, mosques, they don't have to do that. They don't have to tell anyone, including their own members, what the pastor gets paid, how many people are highly paid that happen to be related to the pastor. I mean, there are literally, Nicole, hundreds and hundreds of exemptions and exceptions just to federal law that only apply to churches. Only apply to religious groups.
Wow.
Not to the Birdwatch Society, not to the Cancer Society, not for some environmental group.
Now, Barry Lynn, you are the executive director of Americans United for Separation of Church and State, and you guys work diligently fighting against this inequity in the law, shall we say. Are there any other groups working alongside you, maybe the ACLU perhaps? I understand they're filing a challenge to this executive order today.
Yeah, I don't know the details of that. I'm not sure what they're filing about. The other part of this, of course, made it clear that the president is going to allow religious organizations, as soon as he changes a few regulations, to discriminate, if they're religious organizations, against students or others who may be obtaining health coverage through these religiously affiliated colleges, universities, hospitals, so that they don't have to cover contraception. And even in the Obama administration, all that these groups had to do was simply say in a letter or on a government form, we, in good conscience, cannot cover contraception because we think it's wrong. People like our two plaintiffs, and we're the only organization that actually represents any real people in any of those dozens of lawsuits involving contraceptive coverage in religiously affiliated organizations, they wouldn't even say we can't in conscience do something because it would violate our conscience. So this is like saying you can be a conscientious objector, you know, to war, but you don't even have to state it because that would be too intrusive. And I know if you've got listeners who went through the Vietnam period, you pretty much needed to write a treatise in order to obtain a conscientious objector classification. You couldn't just assert it, and then they'd say, yep, that's true, must be true, you don't have to go. But in this case, if you don't want to cover contraceptives, you claim, Notre Dame claims, a lot of other Christian colleges claim, it's too much of an intrusion into their religious freedom to write a letter just declaring that contraception is sinful and we won't cover it in an insurance plan. And I know this sounds so bizarre.
It does.
But this is what they've argued. Now we've been successful in this Notre Dame case, and we're assessing what, since we're the only group that actually represents anyone, we'd love to be able to find a way to continue this a case on behalf of our students at Notre Dame, but it's not clear because we haven't seen the regulations. A lot of this is nonsensical stuff that he says this morning. 50 people have been sued, the Little Sisters of the Poor, several of whom were in the audience in the Rose Garden. Said they were sued. They were not sued. They just wouldn't cover contraceptive insurance. They refused to cover it, and they sued the government. It's nobody's suing nuns. I hate this image. Everybody hates it. And I hate these images of some kind of restriction on the freedom of speech. I would defy anybody, including members of the House or the Senate. Go to five churches in your community on any given Saturday or Sunday, listen to what is said, and then tell me how there's no diversity, there's no freedom of speech, because of course you're going to see that. I remember one Sunday waking up, and this was the issue on Fox, and there was Jerry Falwell and Jesse Jackson arguing about it. You could not find people who that very Sunday were not about to preach entirely different subjects, entirely different sides of an issue. That's what pulpit freedom is in America. Nothing is established that would in any way curtail that. No person has ever lost a tax exemption because of talking about issues,
right,
no matter how controversial. And
though
no matter
they should,
the center,
right? Though people
no,
like me...
They should. But I mean, when the president keeps saying these things, and I truly don't get this guy. I mean, I don't understand why his speechwriters don't correct this stuff. Maybe he just goes off script. I don't know. But he says things like there's no freedom of speech in the pulpits. He acts like you can't talk about being anti-abortion, or you can't talk about being pro-choice. You can't talk about anything in the churches of America, and that is flatly an alternative fact.
Right. Well, it's probably because he hasn't set foot in a church in who knows how long. You know, the man lies with impunity, so he doesn't know what he's talking about. It's like yesterday he went off on how wonderfully the Israelis and the Palestinians work together, and he really doesn't have a clue. No clue whatsoever. And now they're planning a party at the Rose Garden because this America's AHCA passed the House without realizing that, you know, that's not a victory. It still has to go through the Senate. And thankfully, knocking on wood laminate here, it stands little chance of passing the Senate. But they're bringing in the beer. They're actually bringing in the beer for a party.
Yeah, no, well, maybe some of the people that were there this morning will come back. I also found it so repugnant that today, before he started talking about the executive order, he described how every president has declared National Day of Prayer. That's what today is, National Day of Prayer, but that every president didn't have a ceremony in the Rose Garden, and all the people there were applauding, and I could recognize a large number of these people because it'd be people I've been fighting for a quarter of a century, and the audacity of thinking that prayer is so important today, we're going to invite all these people under the lawn of the Rose Garden, and I'm going to come and pray with them, although I didn't see him praying with them, but I presume before he came out, maybe he was praying. And as you pointed out, he's not been known to darken the doors of churches until he became a candidate.
Last question on this. Why do we have a National Day of Prayer? I thought we had separation of church and state.
Well, we do, but unfortunately... back in the 50s, there was an effort, of course, to make sure that everybody realized we weren't just America, but we were Christian America. And Billy Graham's evangelistic crusade had come through Washington. Somebody said, well, it would be a good thing to give Billy Graham an award, a good feeling of great spiritedness from the government. So let's create a National Day of Prayer. Oh, and I have never understood, what are we supposed to do on the National Day of Prayer? Are we supposed to pray louder or harder or maybe more times a day? We don't need, if you pray, and I do, if you pray, you pray on your own time to your own God, either to thank God, whatever that represents to you, for something that's happened, or pray to that same God for something you wish would happen.
Right, and I'm someone who doesn't pray, but I've always learned that this is something that's supposed to be done privately, on your own. It's a very private, personal thing.
Yeah, well, you probably are thinking of that passage in Matthew where this fellow Jesus mentions that don't be a hypocrite and pray in public.
Yeah.
Go into a closet and pray privately, and then, as he puts it, my Father will take care of you. No, but that's because you've picked this up somehow, and today the repulsive view of Donald Trump talking to these right-wing political hacks about prayer was as disturbing to me as to any of my fellow colleagues here who have no spiritual interest whatsoever. It's just repugnant. 81% of evangelicals voted for this guy. They didn't care what his personal conduct was. They didn't care what he thought about women. They didn't care what he thought about Muslims. They voted for him anyway, and that's a higher percentage than ever in America voted for any other candidate, any other president.
Talk about hypocrisy.
Barry
Lynn, Executive Director of Americans United for Separation of Church and State, I thank you profusely for the work you do. AU.org is where people can find you. I hope if anyone's got a few extra bucks hanging around that they'll give a donation, because the work you do is so important. And as we said, there are not many others doing this kind of work. And so if the separation of church and state is important to you and you're offended by today's executive order, you need to support Americans United. Barry Lynn, thank you so much for your time today and for the work you do.
Thanks so much.
Always a pleasure to talk with Barry Lynn. He's one of the really, really good guys. You know, I'm not a fan of organized religion, but knowing that there are people in the religious community like the Reverend Barry Lynn makes me feel better, because he's fighting for righteousness, not hypocrisy. All right. I'm going to have to redo What's News Today after the show and update it, because they did hold the vote on the American Healthcare Act, and it did very narrowly pass the House, 217 to 213. Not a single Democratic vote, and 20 Republicans voted against it. Those people need to be applauded and thanked. Those who voted for it, for instance, Mario Diaz-Balart here in Miami, that was a district that Hillary Clinton won big, and I hope that was just the final nail in his coffin. Anyway, Howie Klein is back today, so we'll check out what's news. Remember, obviously, I put this together this morning, so it was before the vote. I will redo it after the show, just what I want to do. And then Howie Klein is back with us, so stick around. I'm Nicole Sandler on NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
I read the news today, oh boy.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
It's back.
Just when you thought it was safe to get sick, comes a GOP health care plan that we all thought was buried. Night of the Living Bill. Scream in horror as Congress tries to take your health care yet again.
They're coming to get you, Barbara.
Night of the Living Bill, starring Barack Obama, Paul Ryan, the Freedom Caucus, and as the bill, this truck. Night of the Living Bill, coming soon to a... Wait, no, it just got killed again.
All you zombies hide your face.
The House plans to vote on Thursday on their bill to repeal and replace large portions of Obamacare. The sticking point up to this time was pre-existing conditions, which the 45th Oval Office occupant promised would be included.
Pre-existing conditions are in the bill, and I just watched another network than yours, and they were saying pre-existing is not covered. Pre-existing conditions are in the bill, and I mandated. I said it has to be.
So we have, bullshit.
But we have now pre-existing conditions in
bullshit.
The bill. We've set up a pool for the pre-existing conditions so that the premiums can be allowed to fall. We're taking across all of the borders or the lines so that insurance companies can compete. When I watch some of the news reports, which is so unfair, and they say we don't cover pre-existing conditions, we cover it beautifully.
So you're saying it's going to be pre-existing for everybody?
This has evolved over a period of 3 or 4 weeks.
So what I hear you saying is pre-existing is going to be in there for everybody. It's not going to be up to the
states. Pre-existing is going to be in there.
Wrong.
And it's
not
also going to create
Wrong.
Pools.
Okay.
And pools are going to take care of the pre-existing.
Despite those promises, the AHCA does not cover everyone. So Congressman Fred Upton and Billy Long came up with a fix. They added $8 billion to the measure to help cover insurance costs for the people with pre-existing conditions. Yeah, that'll be enough.
Paul Ryan put out a tweet saying that the MacArthur Amendment ensures that people with pre-existing conditions will get covered. That is a lie. Okay, he has to know that it doesn't do that. He has to be intentionally deceiving people when he says that it would do that, because by definition, what this amendment does is give the state an ability to opt out and create their own pools, which are a morass of problems for people at the high end of risk.
The Republicans have been talking for quite a while now, the conservatives, about reenacting some of these high-risk pools. The White House and congressional leadership are playing chicken with each other. Somebody's got to go and deliver the bad news, ultimately, that what they really intend to do is take away guaranteed coverage for pre-existing conditions. That means, you know, 14-plus million people who can expect to have cancer sometime in their lifetime would not be necessarily covered, or they'd be in one of these high-risk pools with, you know, premiums at whatever.
Someone who was born with a sick kid like Jimmy Kimmel. You qualify as someone with a pre-existing condition.
Plus, the bill hasn't even been scored by the CBO yet. That hasn't stopped the GOP from intentionally misleading the public.
They've got to pass it today.
Well, no. Or they'll never pass it.
They got to pass it today, or else they'll find out how bad the bill is if they actually read it, and then
Correct.
Their constituents won't let them pass the bill. That is political day trading, and it's stupid and short-sighted, and it's never going to pass the Senate. So your statement that they want to go back to the district and say they repealed Obamacare is not something they're going to be able to say, because the senators are going to look at this and go, are you kidding me? What's wrong with you people?
In other news.
Look, this was terrible. It makes me mildly nauseous to think that we might have had some impact on the election. But honestly, it wouldn't change the decision.
FBI Director James Comey testifying before the Senate Judiciary Committee about throwing up in his mouth a little as the rest of the nation violently vomited. President Trump announced he'll visit Israel, the Vatican, and Saudi Arabia later this month on his first trip as president. That comes just a day after he inferred that Middle East peace will be easy.
Let's see if we can find the solution. It's a something that I think is frankly maybe not as difficult as people have thought over the years, but we need two willing parties.
He's talking about solving a problem that has eluded every president in the modern era. Never mind any emperor of the previous eras.
And then, while hosting the Palestinian Authority leader Mahmoud Abbas at the White House, he actually said,
I also applaud the Palestinian Authority's continued security coordination with Israel. They get along unbelievably well. I had meetings, and at these meetings, I was actually very impressed and somewhat surprised at how well they get along. They work together beautifully. But there can be no lasting peace unless the Palestinian leaders speak
Asshole.
In a unified voice against incitement to violate and violence and hate. There's such hatred, but hopefully there won't be such hatred for very long.
If you appreciate these What's News reports and the Nicole Sandler Show, please consider making a donation. Our work is 100% listener supported, so we can't do it without your help. For more information, please visit NicoleSandler.com/donate.
The Nicole Sandler Show is 100% listener supported. Have you given yet? Nicole decided not to put her show behind a paywall, knowing that many can't afford the luxury of paying for a podcast. But if you're able to, she needs your financial support to continue doing this. Consider a monthly subscription. You'll get all the regular shows and have access to the new Monday Music Show podcast and The Vault at NicoleSandler.com, plus bonus content. Give when you can. Just visit NicoleSandler.com/donate. Remember, she can't do this without you. Are you a multinational corporation hungry for a treat? Well, come on down to Schmucky Chucky's, where you'll personally be seated by Chuck Schumer himself.
So many dishes, and they're all fresh.
You're gonna love our Blue Dog special, the Dino Burger, because we say so.
A good hamburger and french fries.
And every burger comes with a side order of
grits. I love grits. I love anything with corn. It's corn.
All for only $50,000. Wash it all down with a Dirty Debbie.
9/10 water, 1/10 orange juice. After a week or two, you drink this, it's 200 calories and it's acetic.
And wipe your mouth with a tissue print of Glass-Steagall. For dessert, try our DNC tarts.
Little cookies, tell the quality of that.
Most restaurants give you a mint, but at Schmucky Chucky's, you get complimentary.
Sweet and low.
Who picks up the tab for all this? Find out now with Howie Klein of DownWithTyranny.com on The Nicole Sandler Show.
Oh, what a day, what a day. Hi, Howie Klein. Uh-oh, I don't hear Howie Klein. Oh, no. Oh, no. I'm going to have to try him back again. I did check in with Howie this morning, and he said, yes, today we'll give it a shot. So let's try calling one more time. One ringy dingy. Two ringy dingy.
Hello.
There he is. Hey, Howie, it's Nicole.
Hey, Nicole.
How are you doing?
Okay. How about you?
I'm hanging in there. What a day, huh?
Yes. I'm sort of going over the vote now.
Yeah, so there were 20 Republicans who voted no. The rest of them, I got to tell you, my congressman, thankfully, is a Democrat, and he's okay. Ted Deutch, he's not the best, but he's far from the worst. So I thought I would try reaching some of the other South Florida members. I know Ileana Ross-Lehtinen, who's already said she's not running for re-election. She was a firm no. But Mario Diaz-Balart was undecided, I think. And so I tried calling his office. Called D.C., got voicemail saying that the mailbox was full. I called his office down in Miami in Doral, and somebody answered. Put me on hold. I held for about 10 minutes. Finally hung up, called back again, put me on hold, held for about 10 minutes before I had to go because I had work to do. But I guess that was his, his tactic, just not talk to anybody, not take any calls, and then vote for this piece of crap bill.
Right. I mean, and he's a Republican who's got a pretty gerrymandered district that's fairly safe for him. So he hasn't been really that worried about it in the past. But things are changing. Alina Valdez, who ran against him last time, is going to run again this time.
Okay.
And it's a district where, although Trump won, he won narrowly.
Okay. So hopefully, that one could flip. Ileana's district, and again, she voted no. That one looks like it. I think they've already put it in the leaning blue category with her out of the picture.
Hillary won by 10 points there. That is a Democratic district all the way. The only reason why Ileana is still in Congress is because she's very, very close with Debbie Wasserman Schultz, who has let it be known over the years that no Democrat can run against Ileana and keep their good standing in the Democratic Party.
Right. Now, well, it wasn't only Ileana, though. It was that whole South Florida Miami contingent. It was Ileana Ross-Lehtinen and the Diaz-Balart brothers. But Lincoln Diaz-Balart has since
especially
left.
Was a very good friend of of Wasserman Schultz. Wasserman Schultz doesn't have that kind of power anymore. So Ileana saw the writing on the wall. She says otherwise. She says she would have won, but she probably wouldn't have. But if you want to hear the worst news that I've heard in a long, long time, then this is very, very well accredited news.
Yeah.
Or it came from a source that's impeccable. The DCCC is literally trying to get Patrick Murphy to run for Ileana's seat.
Oh, my God.
Just think about that.
Oh, my
Patrick
God.
Patrick Murphy from Jupiter, from West Palm. They want to drag him down. And then, you know, when I said to the person at the DCCC who told me this, he doesn't even live there. The guy started laughing and said, well, true, but his father parks his yacht there.
Oh, my God. Oh, my. See, and this is everything that's wrong with the Democratic Party. You know,
You are so right. It sure is.
Yeah.
I mean, that seat is so blue. That should be a solid blue district. They could get a really good progressive to run there. And instead, they're going to get a so-called ex-Republican who already has a voting record in Congress of just voting on everything against Democrats. He was Wall Street's number one darling. Number one. They liked him better than any other Democrat last year. And they showed that affection by giving him more money than any other Democrat last year. They love Patrick Murphy on Wall Street. He's their guy. And this is what the Democratic Party, I mean, there are Democrats running for that seat. There are several. Another one, a very high-profile Democrat, who wanted to run. And when she called the DCCC, they said, don't bother, we're behind Patrick Murphy.
Oh, my God. You know, Florida, you don't have to live in the district. Is it that way in some other states as well? But, you know, we've
almost
seen
all states you don't have to live in the district. A lot of states, you have to move to the district. But like in the case of Mimi Walters in Orange County, California, she was elected. This is her third term, and she still hasn't moved into her district.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. Well, you know, when Alan West was my congressman, he didn't live in the district. Sure. Never moved into it. And the town hall meeting he had, the so-called town hall meeting where I was arrested, wasn't in the district either. But it was at a mega church, which the executive order dump signed today made that kind of stuff easier. This is a hell of a day, isn't it?
Yeah, pretty bad. And when no one was looking, the House Financial Services Committee took the next step towards getting rid of Dodd-Frank and letting the banks just do whatever the hell they want to do and rob and cheat and steal and tank the economy again. And it was it was basically a party line vote. The Democrats voted no. The Republicans voted yes. Only one scummy blue dog voted with the Republicans, a guy from Georgia named David Scott. He voted with the Democrats on most of it, but he was the only one that broke ranks and voted with the Republicans on one piece of it. And then that'll eventually, work its way through the committees, get on the House floor, and the Republicans will pass it. And if it passes the Senate also, which is not as certain, Trump will sign it.
Yep.
And that will be the end of consumer protections against Wall Street.
You know, and it was like pulling teeth to scratching and clawing our way through everything to get anything done while Obama was president. And Trump just uses, executive orders, or I'm going to sign that away, I'm going to sign that away. And they stealthily get these other things through. I noticed I was watching the vote, and before they took the vote on the AHCA, the first thing they did, though, was take a vote on exempting themselves from this legislation. And gee, that one passed unanimously with all the Democrats voting with the Republicans saying, whatever happens, we want no part of it for ourselves.
God.
Yeah. It's that kind of shit that pisses me off. So now this bill will go to the Senate, although it's not going to be until next month. They're not even going to take it up for debate until then. Any thoughts on what's going to happen in the Senate with this?
Unlikely to be able to pass in the Senate. There are enough Republican senators who have already said that for one reason or another they can't support it. So I don't see it going through. They don't have much of a margin in the Senate, so they really can't lose more. I think they can lose two votes, if they lose three votes, they're finished. And there are definitely more than three Republicans who have said that they won't vote for it. I mean, I don't even think it's going to be that close. I think it's going to be more like eight Republicans will oppose it, no Democrats will vote for it, and it'll die in the Senate. That's what I think will happen. I don't have a crystal ball, but I follow this stuff pretty closely.
Right.
I've read the things that Republicans have said, and enough of them have said that there are things in the bill, specific things in the bill, that they won't vote for. So, you know, the other thing, what will probably happen is, excuse me, they'll either just defeat it, or they'll send it back with lots and lots of changes, and then it'll go into a conference committee, and then you have, and that's what Ryan is expecting, that there'll be a conference committee, and then in that committee, they'll try to work out the differences. But what will happen at that point will be, presumably, but many of the worst things that caused the Freedom Caucus to vote for this thing, those will be taken out
sure.
of the bill
well,
in the conference committee. So the conference committee will then send something to the House and something to the Senate for a vote. I'm guessing that the Freedom Caucus, enough Freedom Caucus members, plus
we'll say
the moderates who are against it anyway, will not vote for it, so it'll die. It'll die.
Right.
I really don't feel this thing is going to become law.
I hope not. I'm reading from Philip Klein on Twitter, he's the managing editor of Washington Examiner. GOP Senate plans to draft a whole new bill rather than use House bill as a starting point. And again, the Senate and the House are miles and miles apart. But, you know, Dave Weigel just tweeted something that is... It's sadly true. He wrote, if it dies in the Senate, at least 40% of base voters will enter 2018 thinking Trump repealed Obamacare, because they're stupid. And there's a victory party going on now, allegedly, apparently, in the Rose Garden, where they even brought in the beer. They bust all the House members, the Republican House members, over to the White House to have a little celebratory party.
Did Billy Long get his own bus?
I don't know. He probably needed it. So, were there any surprises in anybody who stood out as one of the no votes that you know was like a shocker? I mean, I as much as I want to, yeah, I'm sorry.
Not that there were shockers, but there were some people that took relatively courageous votes. For example, you get libertarians like Thomas Massie in Kentucky, or Walter Jones in North Carolina. Mm-hmm. I mean, in Walter Jones's district, Trump took over 60%. In Thomas Massie's district in Kentucky, Trump took over 65%.
Wow.
So for them to vote no, which they both did, that, it's not the same thing as when, someone votes no where Trump got, 38% of the vote. I mean, that person is pretty safe, but I think that it's fairly courageous of people like Massey and Jones to vote no, when, especially with Trump threatening to get behind primaries against people. And Jones has primaries pretty regularly. I mean, he usually gets primaried from the right, and this time you can count on it. He'll be primaried from the right. And Trump will back the person who's running against him. I say he was courageous in his vote today.
Well, good. I'm glad to hear that. At least a couple of people stood up. So, Howie, do you think today's votes will impact 2018 in any way? I mean, will it hurt any?
I do in a very big way. I mean, I think that even if you just take the most simplistic look at it. I mean, you can't, because obviously there are a lot of factors. Like, in other words, who's the candidate? Who's going to run against these people? Are you going to have a good candidate?
Mm-hmm.
Or are you going to have the DCCC
pulling Patrick Murphy
garbage out of their asses like Patrick Murphy, which you can count on. They will do that whenever they can. But when there are good candidates running, so let's just take the DCCC out of this for the sake of this discussion.
Okay.
It's unrealistic because you can't take them out of it because they're going to be there doing their worst as they always do. But, I mean, for example, you know, I had a post today which I want to recommend to your readers. I put it up at 6 this morning. It's a guest post from an iron worker. So this is a union guy who's, you know, one of the officers of his union. He's a real grassroots Democrat and a real grassroots organizer. And he's looked around and he's gotten sick to his stomach that none of the politicians in his district are willing to take on Paul Ryan.
Yeah.
And this guy said, you know, the hell with that. I'm going to run against Paul Ryan. And I mean, he hasn't made the final decision yet, as he explains in the post.
This is Randy Bryce?
The way he put it. Sorry?
This is Randy Bryce?
Randy Bryce, right. The way he put it is, currently, I'm leaning into it. That was his, that was the way he put it.
Okay.
And he is. He, you know, I spent a lot of time with him on the phone, talking a lot about him. I asked him to write a guest post so that people could understand, you know, where he's coming from. But he's going to run against Paul Ryan. So the DCCC doesn't, not only do they not run candidates against Paul Ryan, they try to cut off the legs of any Democrat who does run against Paul Ryan. So they will do everything they can to hurt any Democrat who runs against Ryan. That's the way they are. That's an order direct from Nancy Pelosi. She does not want it. She just is, you know, gets crazy about it.
I don't get that. They wouldn't run anybody against John Boehner either. And I remember, was it, who, Justin Kasuli? Was that the guy who ran against John Boehner?
That's right.
And I remember him from you, from Blue America.
Ran against Boehner.
And
I mean, what they do is Pelosi will get on the phone herself, as will Steve Israel, and as will Lujan, these people, and Crowley, and Hoyer. They will get on the phone and call up institutional donors. They'll call unions. They'll call the big money people, and they'll say, do not give money to Justin Kasuli. Do not give money to Randy Bryce. That's what they do, and they will go crazy on them. And if you want to be a friend of ours, you will not give any money to this race. It's a waste. Don't waste your money on this race. And then they'll have their media people call up all these assholes inside the Beltway, you know, people at the Hill and Cook, and they'll give, you know, they'll be whispering into their ears about how this is an impossible race. It can never happen. And they'll do all they can to undermine the Democratic candidates. That's what they do. They are so fucking horrible. They are so fucking horrible. I hate to use that word. I really do. It sickens me to have to curse like
often.
That. I'm so sorry.
Right.
Not
fine.
To you. I know you don't care, but to the listeners who do. I feel bad. But it just drives me crazy that these DCCC people will fight to keep Paul Ryan and put energy and resources into keeping Paul Ryan in office. That's what they do. But if Randy makes the decision to pull the trigger and to run, which I'm pretty sure he's going to, we have a really, really good candidate running against Ryan. I first learned about him from Rob Zurbon, who almost beat Ryan one time. And the state senator from that area, Chris Larson, the guy who led the walkout from in the legislature long ago in Wisconsin, and they're both awesome progressives, and they're the ones who introduced me to Randy Bryce.
Well, great. I was reading that post, and it sounds great. I was going to ask you because I remember Rob Zurbon, who I think ran twice, came very
yes.
close. How did Hillary do in that district, in Ryan's district?
She didn't do well.
No,
it wasn't so much that Trump did. It wasn't so much that Trump did well. It's that they really rejected Hillary.
Her.
But everything that Hillary is, all of the objections to Hillary that people had, they can't make those objections to Rob Bryce. He's the opposite of that. He is a blue collar iron worker. They're not going to have a problem there. Now, Ryan, it's not like Trump did so well. Trump got 52.6%.
Yeah, that's not great.
That's not that great.
No.
But Hillary did really badly. She tumbled from Obama had about 47 or 48%. Hillary had 42%. So it's like it's not so much that they liked Trump as they didn't like Hillary. But those people who didn't like Hillary are going to be just absolutely delighted with Bryce. This guy is the salt of the earth. He's as good as they come. You know, a young father with a young kid, a 10-year-old son. This guy is like an ideal candidate.
Great. Well, good. And again,
and he understands, you know, what he has to face. I mean, it's not just the Republicans. It's not just Paul Ryan and the biggest bank account of anyone in Congress. It's not just that. He's got to worry about goddamn Nancy Pelosi and the DCCC doing everything they can to cut his legs off.
You know, is Howie Klein, is the thing with the Democrats not challenging anyone in Republican leadership, is it sort of a quid pro quo? Do the Republicans not target Pelosi? And
theoretically, it's quid pro quo, but the Republicans always break it.
Yeah.
The Republicans, they don't mind going after Democratic leaders.
No.
They do it anyway.
That's right.
I mean, that's why I think Nancy Pelosi has really lost her mind. I hate to say it. I know I've said it before, but she has. I've known this woman for decades. She has lost her mind.
And she's not making any sounds about going away, huh?
She is, as always.
Is she? Oh, so maybe she will. Because
doesn't want to go away for a pretty good reason. She says she doesn't want to go away. She tells her intimates that she doesn't want to go away while Hoyer is still there, ready to take over.
Oh.
Because she knows how terrible he would be.
Really?
So she's saying that it's a matter of she's sacrificing because she would like to retire, but she's not going to do it in a situation where Hoyer could take over the Democratic Party, which is pretty selfless. If it's true, it's pretty selfless of her. Hoyer, I mean, as bad as Nancy is on some levels, she's really, really good on other levels. Hoyer is bad on every level. I mean, there's a lot of really good things about Nancy Pelosi. You know, sometimes when I go off on her like I have been today, I'm just thinking about, you know, her and the DCCC and that kind of strategy. But when it comes to other things, she's as good as it gets.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, and Hoyer is just awful in every way imaginable. There's no saving grace with Hoyer. None. Nothing.
No.
Zero.
And the rest of the Democratic leadership is not great either. But Steny Hoyer, yeah, he's got to go. But he's not making any noises.
Yeah, but he's a year older than Nancy. So all these people are saying Nancy's too old. She should go.
He's older.
I never hear them say Nancy and Hoyer, even though Hoyer's a year older. But that's because Nancy's a woman.
Yep.
And there's, she's an old woman. Whereas when it's a guy, they tend to overlook it. It's really, really sexist and unfair.
Yeah. You know, Howie, I want to go back out to California for a minute, because Daryl Issa, who's in San Diego, right? He's down or deep in Orange County. He
battles Orange County and San Diego. So it's the northern part of San Diego County and the very southern part of Orange County.
And he, I mean, his race was one of the last to be called because it was so razor tight.
The last.
Right? And he almost lost.
He won by just over 1,000 votes.
Wow. Wow. That's nothing down there. And so, and he was on the fence for the vote. He wouldn't say which way he was going. And he voted for this piece of shit.
He wanted the fence, though. That he wanted people to think he was on the fence.
Right.
He just didn't want people to know what he was going to do. He was hoping that it would never come to a vote and he'd never have to tell. But he was never going to vote anything but vote yes, which is what he did. He voted yes. There was never any chance he wouldn't vote yes. He's a Trump guy.
Right.
Total Trump guy.
So is there someone
the
who can unseat
who ran
him?
Against him last time, Doug Applegate, and almost beat him, is ready to beat him this time.
Good.
I mean, remember, last time there was 1,000 vote difference between them, a little more than 1,000 votes. Issa spent over $6 million. Applegate only spent $2 million.
Wow.
And the DCCC got in really, really late. I mean, it was, you know, by the time they got in, the race was there was not much they could do. Because they didn't believe in the race, but then with Applegate, you know, doing so well in the polling at the end, the DCCC jumped in at the end, bought a bunch of TV spots that didn't do any good at all. But, you know, they did put money into it in that way. They, you know, but these TV spots that they do are just terrible. All they are is a way to funnel money to consultants who are either related to DCCC members or close friends of theirs. This is disgusting. But this time, they're doing something even worse. A friend of Nancy Pelosi's, a crooked Democrat who lives in the district, wants some other candidate, some friend of his, to run. And he's gone to Nancy and said, you got to push Applegate out so we can get our guy in. And Nancy said, oh, okay, we will.
Even though he came that close, within 1,000 votes.
Closest district in the whole country. Even though he's going to probably beat ISA this time, she's still encouraging. Because the guy is a multimillionaire.
That's it.
He's been giving money to her and Democratic candidates and Democratic committees for years and years and years. He's just one of her cronies. She doesn't have a lot of people like that, but she's got a pretty good Rolodex of people who, you know, that's her base. It's not the people of San Francisco. It's these, you know, very, very wealthy Democratic donors who she can always count on. So when one of these people calls her and they say, Nancy, you know, I got my pal who wants to run for this seat. We got to get rid of Applegate. The guy's name, by the way, is Ira Lechner. He's somewhat well known because he was a legislator in Virginia who ran and lost for lieutenant governor one time. He's a creepy old guy, you know, very, very rich, throws his money around. He's a real pig. And, you know, he's got some good credentials because he's, he's a Democrat. He's not a Republican. He is a Democrat.
Mm-hmm.
But you said earlier, that's everything that's wrong with the Democratic Party.
It is.
You'd say that about Ira Lechner, too. He's everything that's wrong with the Democratic Party.
Well,
he doesn't think all the work that was done on the grassroots level by not just by Doug Applegate, but by all the people who supported Doug Applegate and how close they came and how ready they are to beat ISA now. And then you got this guy, who's just because he's rich, coming in and saying, you know, I got a guy, he'll come in, he'll win. And who is the guy? The guy's nobody. The guy didn't. The guy was a treasurer for Orange County for Hillary last time. Just some Hillary hack who is worthless. Just a worthless piece of shit. And he just thinks he didn't even try to help against ISA last time at all.
Unreal.
He didn't lift a finger against ISA. And now he thinks he can come in and beat him. Just
wow.
Crap. Just crap.
And that is it. And that is the problem with the Democratic Party. They learned nothing from the 2016 debacle. They learned nothing from the
debacle. They learned nothing about anything. They're so fucking stupid. They don't learn. I can't believe I'm cursing. I feel terrible.
No, you don't do that often. It's but it's warranted. Go for it. No, and they do this, and they'll search out rich Democrats who can self-finance. That's their big thing. Rather than get someone who's a great progressive, who's going to do the right thing, who's going to inspire people like Bernie does, they go for somebody with deep pockets. They like Patrick Murphy because he's got the Wall Street connections.
Exactly. And what about Patrick Murphy's daddy?
Yes, well, of course. Always daddy.
Republican, you know, very, very, very rich Republican, willing to put lots and lots of millions into Democratic campaigns. Hey, that's right up Pelosi's alley.
Yeah, well, you know, if this is going to be an open seat, why wouldn't Patrick Murphy just run as the Republican that he is?
That would be funny. Wouldn't that be a riot?
It would be hysterical, and then we could actually have a real, you know, good progressive Democrat running there. Listeners have heard my attorney, Bruce Jacobs, on the air because he's really a good guy who is toying with the idea of running for Congress. And I said he should run for Ileana's seat. And he said he's waiting for a sign.
There are a lot of people already tossed their hat into that ring.
Uh-huh.
By the way, there was one thing I forgot to mention when we were talking about Bryce before.
Yeah.
Randy Bryce, I was going to probably run against Paul Ryan. He was a ardent Bernie supporter the first time around, and in the primary,
mm-hmm.
and Bernie won that district very, very handily. I mean, Bernie, you know, knocked it out of the park in Ryan's district in the Democratic primary, but then after Bernie after Hillary wound up beating Bernie nationally, then Randy Bryce, of course, became a Hillary supporter, and in fact was asked by her campaign to be one of the electors from Wisconsin to vote for her in the Electoral College.
Wow.
Which she never had the chance to do, of course, since she
lost.
Didn't win.
Right. Well, I'm going to keep my eye out for him. I just followed him on Twitter. I lost his Twitter handle, but I'll post it on the blog at NicoleSandler.com after the show.
Iron Stash.
Iron Stash, right. I guess he's got a mustache.
Right, because he's an iron worker and he's got this kind of handlebar-ish mustache.
Cool. So Iron Stash on Twitter. When he announces, right, we'll have to get him on the show. Howie Klein, as always, thank you. It's great to have you back.
Good to talk to you. Thanks.
All right. I'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Howie Klein, find him at downwithtyranny.com. And with that, we are done for the day. Tomorrow's Friday. I think Joel Silberman will be back with us. We've got, we could use a dose of Joel right about now. All right. Thank you for listening, everyone. Until tomorrow, I'll leave you with Brad and Desi in the Green News Report.
It's Thursday, May 4, 2017.
I think you'll see a market decline in solar installers, solar businesses, and people that are considering it.
Indiana governor signs bill to gut state's rooftop solar industry. Another coal mine tragedy, this time in Iran. Exxon ordered to pay $20 million for refinery pollution. Denmark moves to phase out renewable energy subsidies. Plus, Rhode Island town makes history as the first in the U.S. to be powered by offshore wind.
All of those history lessons and more straight ahead from bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
You can't deny global warming is happening and then say, but don't call us stupid. That's the little dilemma I'm in.
What a stupid dilemma. This is your Green News Report.
Don't call me stupid. Well, then don't be stupid.
I'm gonna soak up the sun.
Okay, Desi Doyen, speaking of stupid, we're keeping our eyes on the White House and their decision about whether or not they will become the shame of planet Earth by having the U.S. drop out of the landmark U.N. Paris Climate Agreement. Just incredible that they're even thinking about it, but they are, and we're keeping our eyes on that. Until that decision, what else do you have for us today, Desi Doyen?
Well, first, in Iran, another fossil fuel tragedy. At least 21 miners were killed and dozens more injured in a coal mine explosion in the northern Iranian province of Golestan on Wednesday. Rescue operations were suspended due to toxic gases that sent 25 responders to a hospital. Officials say as many as 40 coal miners may still be trapped in the mine. Here in the U.S., in Indiana Governor Eric Holcomb on Tuesday signed legislation to phase out payments to homeowners who sell clean electricity back to the grid.
Unbelievable.
Indiana's powerful electric utility industry aggressively lobbied the state legislature to pass the bill to end net metering on new rooftop solar installations. It's a tactic increasingly deployed in state legislatures by investor-owned utilities seeking to block competition from rooftop solar. In an interview with WRTV in Indianapolis, one resident said the law is already impacting potential buyers.
This is going to discourage people putting solar panels on their roofs, and because of the net metering aspects of it. I know a number of people right now who put their orders for solar panels on hold.
And remember, these are the champions of the free market who are doing this, who are making it harder to buy clean solar, easier to burn dirty coal. Geniuses and hypocrites all.
In Texas, a federal judge has ordered oil giant ExxonMobil to pay $20 million for violating the Clean Air Act more than 16,000 times over a five-year period.
Really?
At its Baytown, Texas refinery, located 25 miles east of Houston. Environment Texas, which brought the lawsuit over the pollution, described the fine as, quote, the largest penalty resulting from a citizen suit in U.S. history.
Well, they only violated it 16,000 times?
Yeah. In Alaska, good news for polar bears. The U.S. Supreme Court on Monday refused to hear a case on the federal government's decision to designate more than 187,000 square miles in Alaska as critical habitat for threatened polar bears. That means a decision by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service to protect large swaths of Alaska's coast and waters will stand. Also in Alaska, the Natural Resources Defense Council filed suit in federal court on Wednesday to block President Trump's executive order to lift a ban on offshore drilling in parts of the Arctic and the Atlantic Oceans, areas that had been protected by President Obama last year. The suit alleges that lifting the ban violates federal law. NRDC and the law firm Earth Justice filed the complaint on behalf of a coalition of indigenous Alaskan tribes who will be most impacted by offshore drilling. Meanwhile, the nation of Denmark will soon phase out subsidies for wind energy because its industry no longer needs them. The nation is now on target to have all of its energy needs met by renewables by 2050. The Danish energy minister said it's a development he could not have imagined as recently as last year. The nation is now on target to have all of its energy needs met by renewables by 2050.
That's very good news. Wow, good story.
Here in the U.S., the City Council of Atlanta has unanimously approved a measure to source 100% of its electricity from renewable energy. It's the 27th city in the U.S. and the first in Georgia to make the commitment.
Also a good story.
Finally, just 10 months after starting construction, America's first ever offshore wind farm is now generating clean electricity off the coast of Rhode Island. On Monday, May 1st, Block Island, Rhode Island, shut down its small diesel power plant forever. And after a moment of silence, switched on the new five-turbine Block Island wind farm off the coast of Rhode Island, the first offshore wind farm in the U.S. In a statement, officials said, quote, "The silence was symbolic for saving nearly 1 million gallons of diesel fuel annually."
Too much good news. I don't know what I'm going to do. Thank you. For much more on all of these reports and the ones we couldn't get to, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. From bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Good day, sunshine.